you basically set in what threshold you want the audio to come out at, and it either squeezes the audio down or expands it out to match that level.
There's over 1.9 million podcasts. Most of them never see the results they expected. They want to monetize, but their show ends up costing them money, and they never achieve the listenership they desire. This show will help you launch, grow, monetize, and inspire with your podcast. Get ready to take notes, because here's your host, Adam Adams.
Welcome back to the podcast on podcasting, the show that's going to help you sound better, do better, make more money, or make more impact, or hopefully both. Hopefully you can make impact and money. That'd be great. I'm your host, Adam Adams. Some people call me AAA, especially in the real estate area. I am a podcaster of a few years. I've been enjoying it. One of my podcasts, I ended up selling it because it wasn't serving my real niche audience. I started it wrong. It took a long time to build it up, and I finally got tons of downloads and it was worth something. So I sold that podcast, and it made me kind of think, I want to serve podcasters. I've learned a few things. I helped a few other podcasters launch their shows and just strategize. And because of what they did and our conversations, I think I've just seen so many people do awesome in podcasting if they listened. But if they didn't listen, unfortunately, they're having podcasts that don't get enough downloads. They can't make impact. They can't make money with a show like that. So during this show, it is sponsored by growyourshow.com. That's my company where I support you to be able to market and grow your show. So if you don't do that marketing piece, it's dead. And that's with any type of business. And so I want you to be thinking of your podcast more like a business. And I want to be able to help you and support you to be able to make money. And sound engineering is an important part of that, because I found that lots and lots and lots of people, they leave your podcast if it doesn't sound good. You think that this is wrong. You're like, no. They just want the authentic. They just want it to be real and raw. They don't want me to take ums out. They don't want me to take us out. They don't want me to be on a microphone. They would rather me be just driving in my car. That is absolutely the minority, my friend. You got to sound good if you want to be able to put out a good product. I've never understood a journalist just putting out the first draft, just like not even having an editor, not even spending any time on it, and thinking that that was going to be good. And so that's why I have Christopher Jordan on the show. What's up, Christopher? How are you?
Doing great. How are you, Adam?
I'm doing great as well. In fact, I'm a little sad because you sound so much better than me, because you're an audio engineer. You're using great tools. You're probably using really good recording software. And on my end, I started researching what tools to use, and sure, I just bought a new mic. It's not the one that you use, but it's a good one, not quite as expensive as yours.
That's all right. And hey, I have been an audio engineer for 20 years. I got this mic this year. That's how long it took me to get to the point of having this microphone in front of my face.
Love it.
I have a collection of microphones because I ran a live sound company for bands, things like that. I did live recording, all sorts of stuff. So yeah, I've got like six of my nice mics up on there that I would never put in front of my face for something like this. I could hear my wife in the living room with the door closed.
Yeah.
That's how sensitive it is. And I've got I don't know how many SM58s, you know, regular Singer stage microphones, things like that. So just because you don't have the amazing equipment doesn't mean that you can't get still amazing quality. There really are some best practices that if you follow them all the time, every time, you will end up with a rock solid product.
And I was going to say, that's exactly what I want to talk about. I want to talk about the different products, tools that you own, what software you're using, how you edit as well. Yep. I know you do editing, a lot of it, and audio production, video production, and maybe just talking, because you have a podcast. It's called Talking Sound Podcast. They can find it either by wherever they are right now. They can just search for Talking Sound Podcast.
Yep.
Or they can go to talkingsoundpodcast.com, whichever is easier for them. But I think on this episode, I'm stoked to be with a real sound engineer where I can basically pick your brain to make sure that I sound better, that I'm being able to support my clients better when I help people launch shows.
Yeah.
And ultimately just the listener. I want our listener, because they're podcasters too. I think together, Christopher and I, and you, the listener, can uplift all podcasters to be able to go to another level. So I'm really stoked about that. Go ahead, Christopher.
No, I was going to say, like, we belong to a lot of the same social media groups, and frequently we're like tag teaming oddly the same advice, like regularly. Even today, I think you posted something about getting a new piece of gear.
Oh, you saw that this morning.
I mentioned that you may want a cloud lifter, and then you were like, well, I got this version. I was like, oh, I didn't even see that, because the SM7B and the new MV7 are almost identical, minus about 3 inches off the back of the microphone.
True.
So, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That is so funny. Yeah.
So it's even one of those, like you're saying, we run in the same circles, and you specialize in a different world than what I specialize in, you know? And it is nice to be able to tag team off people like that, to be able to go, you know what? Let me hook you up with my buddy that does that specifically. He can really send you down the right rabbit holes to get where you're trying to go.
Yes.
Because it's a nebulous world, man. It's like asking somebody that doesn't know audio engineering or marketing how to start a podcast is like asking anybody that doesn't know anything about SEO what SEO is. Like, it's just nebulous. It's like eyes start rolling in the back of heads. There is so much to take on whenever you say, okay, let's start a podcast. And the analogy I give people is, imagine saying that you want to have a pet fish. And after you've had the pet fish and you've had it, you go, you know what? I think it needs to go into the ocean now and be a fish. But I want to make sure I can find that fish. Did you make sure you can find that fish before you let it out into the ocean? Because as of 2020, was over 1 million podcasts out there.
So, actually, I was just looking at this, Christopher, about 5 days ago, and I think they just hit 1.9.
As a former broadcast technician, as a former broadcast producer, that is one of the things that whenever I'm speaking at conferences, whenever I'm speaking in lessons, whatever, I try to explain to people that the broadcast industry as of right now is chasing our coattails. We have managed to steal their listener. Most businesses, whenever you walk through the door, you aren't able to have like a radio on your desk anymore. Can't have a radio in your cubicle. You probably definitely can't dial into like 107.5 FM's website on the browser at work, but you can listen to your podcast on your phone in your earbud. So yeah, if you notice, every single TV show, every like news show, all that stuff, as they sign off, make sure to tune into the podcast coming up right after the show. Every single morning show on the radio, all of them, make sure to tune into the podcast right after the show. They realize the fact that even people starting free stuff on Spreaker are stealing their audience.
Yeah, I love that. I have one thing to say that's a little bit on those lines. Yes, I think the podcasters are stealing radio, but I also think that podcasters in general are stealing business from non-podcasters. Just to give you an example, so I'm very familiar with the real estate industry. I've been doing real estate since 2005. And one of the things that most people in real estate need, they need to attract private capital, because you can't really grow and scale if you're only using your own money. It's nearly impossible. Almost everybody uses OPM. Just think about Jeff Bezos, think about Elon Musk, think about Henry Ford, think about all these people. What are they really good at? They're really good at raising money from other people.
They're good at finding angels.
Yeah. So here's the, I've got this coaching program that I'm not trying to sell anyone or anything. No. Just, I've got this coaching program. It's around raising money, attracting capital, branding yourself, getting in front of passive investors. And it's mostly for real estate people, but there's a few people in there that buy businesses. Anyway, I'm not trying to get on a big giant tangent, except I want to mention just one of those clients. They raised $12 million in one webinar. They just had one webinar. It took like an hour or two and a few follow-up calls after, and they were able to have the entire $12 million committed. They were able to close on this giant apartment community, and they joined my group specifically because brand new podcasters that are in the real estate space are starting to steal their business. Like, they've been able to raise $12 million, but it's getting hard for them because they're that not the squeaky wheel anymore.
Yeah.
You know? And who is the squeaky wheel might be a brand new person that doesn't have 16 years of real estate experience. And all of a sudden, all the passive investors are going to them. And these people with a huge amount of experience are losing out on the money.
Absolutely.
They can't close their deals anymore. And I think it was Gary Vee that said, if you don't have a presence by 2022, you're going to lose. And so I only make that not because I want to sell you into my coaching program so you can raise more money. I don't care about that. If you want to do it, do it. But the point is, if you don't start a podcast now, and you're listening to Christopher and Gary Vaynerchuk and Adam Adams, probably by next year, all of your clients are going to be going to somebody who has that podcast.
Yep.
With that said, the best place to find Christopher is Talking Sound Podcast or TalkingSoundPodcast.com. That's where he helps you have more useful tips on sound audio engineering, where you can be able to have the best sound possible. So if you enjoy the four major things we're going to be talking about on this show, if you enjoy them, if you want more, I'm going to try to deliver some, but I won't be able to deliver as much as Christopher. So let's just jump right into it, Christopher. Number one, so the way that I had it in my mind is when we're doing sound on engineering, and correct me if I'm wrong, there really is like four-ish steps. For the first part, which is the tools that we're using, and maybe how we use them. And then we got to think about the recording software, which ones are good, which ones are good for audio, audio only, for interviews, for solo. Yeah. I want to kind of understand that because we're using Zoom today and I might actually change it after hearing that you like something else. And so we want to get into that second part. The third part is post-production, the editing, you know, the editing tools, the software that you might use, which ones are good. We've been using Vegas Pro. A lot of people talk about Audacity. I'm curious, you know, what's out there, what's better, and maybe which ones you would suggest to a new podcaster to use in the beginning or somebody who has more experience like you do, which one you might use. And then I want to go to the fourth part, which is really talking about the publishing platform to use, because there's a lot of talk that there's this one, I don't know why I can't even think of the name of it right now, but it's on your phone, it's free, and they make you have ads about them, that it's free and the easiest way to start podcasts. Don't know why I can't think of the name right now. Most people say don't use that because the audio quality's not very good, the interface isn't very good, and they, I guess, own your stuff. So I want to just talk about those four things and maybe some best practices within them.
Absolutely.
And let's just start right here.
A, when it comes to microphones, you really do have to consider what you're using them for and how you're using them, especially if you're talking about condenser versus dynamic microphones. Dynamic mics do not require phantom power, and they tend to have better noise rejection. What's inside of your microphone is a tiny little piece of Mylar with a copper wind around it. It basically is really a speaker in reverse. If you were able to plug your microphone into a headphone jack and put it to your ear, you could hear audio coming out of it. If you were able to plug your speaker into your microphone jack and talk into it, you would see audio. They are literally the same thing, just backward.
Wow, I never thought about that. And before we get too far into it, you talked about a condenser mic.
Yes.
And you talked about a dynamic mic.
Yes.
I'm currently using a condenser mic. It's a USB mic that's a condenser. Yeah. Meaning that it can pull in lots of other sounds, which is the whole reason why if you're watching the YouTube version of this, you see I have got egg cartons all over my wall because if any sound is going to get pulled into this. Yeah. So I've recently upgraded to a dynamic where you have to be within a foot of it to even anything. And you should be like a fist away. But I heard of another mic and I've always wanted to ask this to somebody smarter than me. So perfect. You're here. What's a ribbon mic? Is that a third version or is it just part of one of those other two?
A ribbon mic operates similar to condenser microphone. It's going to require voltage going into it, things like that. A small amount, not nearly as much. But a ribbon microphone is basically just what it sounds like. As opposed to a round diaphragm, it has a long ribbon of pretty much what is old school, like analog tape.
Okay.
Almost the exact same kind of Mylar.
Curious why people don't talk about it so much. It's really only the condenser and the dynamic that people talk about.
Mainly because ribbon microphones are old technology. If you go back to a lot of the old RCA days, the ones that you saw with like the big RCA over the top, those were ribbon microphones, things like that. They're extraordinarily sensitive. One wrong bump, anything like that, and yes, because it's a ribbon hanging and suspended between two little metal things that are like transducers picking up the vibration of the ribbon. So any wrong movement, you can tear that ribbon. If you tear a corner of it, anything like that, it's shot. It will never sound right. So they're extraordinarily sensitive. They tend to be a little bit more expensive, mainly used in studio use for extreme pickup on instruments, things like that.
Yeah, that makes sense. Because, yeah, condenser mics are better, like if you're going to be singing and playing the guitar and you're like within 3 or 4 feet of it, but you're not right up on it. Like you kind of have to be with these podcast mics or these dynamic mics, I guess.
Yes, exactly. And that's the idea. Whenever you see people in music videos and the microphone is up here and they're singing, that is a condenser mic. And the idea, especially with most condenser mics, is that it's going through a tube preamp. And especially the microphone style itself with the addition of power into it tends to pick up additional harmonics, things like that. So you do get a slightly different range with a dynamic microphone, but once again, you are sacrificing noise floor. And like I said, like if I pulled out my AKG 212 off the shelf over there. So on the AKG 414, for example, there are 5 polar patterns selectable on the microphone with a button. Most microphones only have 1 pattern to them, which means that the electromagnetic field is surrounding the diaphragm in a certain direction, in a certain pattern. Most cardioids look kind of like a heart coming from the back of the microphone to the front, showing you where the noise rejection starts.
Yeah, okay.
In proximity to the microphone. Now, the AKG 414, like I said, has 5 patterns, so it can even go omnidirectional, where I can put it in the middle of a table and pick up 8 people at the same time.
Yeah.
All with the exact same reference.
So this is reminding me of the Blue Yeti in a little way.
That is one of the things that they were trying to mimic, is a multi-pattern microphone.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you kind of your opinion on the Blue Yeti, because I've heard it sound good a few times, but I usually hear it sound really, really bad and pick up way too much noise. And the table noise, people have it in front of them, they have it too far. I just hear reverb, it's a whole echoey room, or they have their gain way too far up or way too far down, or the back of the mic. I think there's this other knob that says, I want you to be directional for just one person, or I want you to be directional for somebody in the front, somebody in the back, or maybe there's a third option, if I'm remembering, that turns it into a 360 degrees, like you were talking about. And personally, I've been podcasting for a long time. I'm not an audio engineer, as you can tell, but I've been podcasting for 4 years, and every single time somebody's proud of themselves for having a Blue Yeti, I think it sounds like shit. Every single time. I want to kind of get your feeling of that one mic and what it can do and what it should do and all that.
Here's my opinion on the Blue Yeti, at least my personal opinion. What was your first car, Adam?
A Dodge Colt Vista.
What do you drive now?
A Honda Pilot.
Which one would you rather have?
Definitely my Pilot. My Vista was $4,000 and my Pilot was more than 10 times that.
And that's just it. The Vista fit your budget. It fit what you were able to work with. It fit your know-how at the time as far as being a car owner and what you were getting into. You know, like, hey, I had a buddy that went out 3-4 years ago. He's in his mid-20s, bought his first car and bought a used BMW. And I was like, I love you. I love you so much. Like, do you have any idea of the world, the maintenance cost you are getting into? He found out in a year whenever he went in for his first $500 oil change.
Oh my gosh.
And I was like, I told you, real cool driving around in that very affordably attained BMW. However, the maintenance will eat you alive. And it's not until, unfortunately, you jump both feet first into something like that. And I know you see just as many people as I do. I'm very good friends with Todd Cochran, owner of Blueberry. He's one of those people as well that just sees people get bad advice compounded on bad advice.
He was recently on the show, and we actually titled the show, you know, Worst Advice You Can Get in Podcasting. So, you know, we had a lot of fun going into that for sure.
And that's just it. I will never, ever dog anybody. I've got a Blue Yeti sitting in my closet back there. I keep it mainly for whenever I go out and speak at conferences and I bring a bunch of microphones to put out on a table so that people can see and have like a mixer with numerous microphones so you can turn them up and hear what they sound like. You know, like, oh, wow, I don't hear a bunch of people 20 feet away with this one, but I do with this one. And for what it is, it's a decent mic. It's a USB powered, basically like standard microphone element, not a capsule like what is inside of most microphones where there are winds of copper. It's a tiny little electrolyte condenser, and there are three of them in a little triangular array.
So let's jump into, because I want to be able to get into all four of these topics
into
one episode. So just if you could share with us what mics you use and what other equipment should go with it to really just sound its best.
Absolutely. I tend to go with the Hyperwound Cardioid. It does, which is what I'm on right now, an RE20 SM7B. On the more affordable end, I will not say cheaper end, but definitely more affordable end. Both of those options tend to run up around $500. There is an MXL version called the MXL BCD01. And that is basically like an RE20 with 3 inches chopped off the back. And I have four of those for mobile use that I rent out with a Rodecaster, 4 pair of headphones, things like that. Until I got this microphone, that is what I used on my shows exclusively. Even when I traveled on the road, one lived in my Pelican. That's what I used for making voiceover announcements at shows, things like that. It is a great microphone that'll run you about $150.
Awesome. MXL BCD01.
Yes. MXL is the company. The model number is BCD01.
Cool. Good stuff. Now, after it goes there, there's some people talking about these things called cloud lifters. And there's a lot of people talking about all these different types of mixing boards. And there's three mixing boards that also you can incorporate some music and other sounds and claps and laughing and things like that. So what do you use, and maybe what should a beginner use?
I am definitely a fan of anybody that's beginning post-produce. I do my show live. I do both of my shows live, actually, but I was also an on-air producer. Like, that is what I did all day, every day for a living, was answer a phone, get them dialed in, tell my host they're there. If my host needed somebody to jab with, this is what I would do, you know, like, hey, well, yeah, you know, that's some wild stuff there, Alex. We'll see what's going on. We have John on the phone, though. So when you're used to running all those buttons, checking three recording programs, making sure that outbound audio is good, wearing all those octopus hats can be real tough. So I'm always a fan of telling initial people that will be doing all their own production to post-produce forever and always.
And what do you mean by post-produce? You mean, are you just saying don't have a Rodecaster, just let it go straight into the computer and then,
well,
and then
if you have means by which to get a Rodecaster, there are numerous options out there. One of them that I carry with me is a Movo omnidirectional USB microphone. And that is my last ditch effort throwdown. That thing costs $59 on Amazon. It is USB powered and is made to sit at a conference table in the middle and record everybody. And it's flat, literally about half an inch tall.
Okay. But by post-produce, you just mean
editing,
when
editing,
you're
editing.
Doing the editing. And so what are the steps that you're seeing that a lot of maybe podcasters are missing in that post-production process with the editing?
I really think that most of what I see missing, Adam, is branding, man. Branding, branding, branding. I see so many people that just start a show and it's like, hey, we have John here. whoa, well, that was a little jarring. As somebody from a production realm, and especially the world of broadcast in my past, the intro is the warm hug. You know, it's one of those things of like, even if you're doing the dishes and you hear Law and Order start in the other room, you know it's time to finish up the dishes. You know, I myself was a huge fan of Coast to Coast AM and Art Bell, and it would take maybe the first three or four notes of me hearing the music from Logan's Run, which was his intro music, for me to finish whatever I was doing and grab my drink and go sit in front of the radio for the next 4 hours and listen to UFOs or vampires or whatever he was talking about that day. So for me, the big one that I see is the branding. It's one of those that should never be an afterthought. And I'm sure that you run across this all the time, especially in the world of marketing stuff, things like that. When it comes to the point of, oh, wow, how are we going to start paying hosting fees? I guess we need to get a sponsor. Well, how are you going to attract that sponsor now? One of the easiest things you can do is literally sell the front end of your intro, like coming to you from the so-and-so studios, the same way they do in radio, except now you have a niche focused audience. So things like that are what I see missing. And I also see just the care and audio treatment, not so much hard editing, because I'm one of those, like I said, I come from a live background. So a few of those, a couple of stammers for me, that's how normal people talk. I'm all right with that. But what I cannot abide is bad audio, where it's like, you had a chance to fix that. You are not a live show. My wife, for instance, is a big fan. I want to say it was the Nerdist podcast whenever it was out and around. And it would just crush me inside, because here's a dude with like budget, Adam, like budget. He has a producer live on air with him. They do everything in post. Like, he sends the guest a microphone package. Why does it sound like you were recording in a stairwell? Like, don't tell me that you didn't have time to treat that audio and get rid of the echo.
Let's just briefly mention that, because you're an audio engineer. And when I was thinking what I thought you would answer when in post-production and editing, I thought it would be like how to get rid of the highs, how to get rid of the lows, equalizing the volume, getting rid of the echoes, the background.
And that's why I'm saying editing or treatment, soundproofing or sound treatment. What you have on your wall there, for those that can't see it, the typical foam egg crates on his wall.
Yeah.
That is sound treatment. That is not soundproofing. Soundproofing is something that you do from the ground up, building a wall inside of a wall to block external sounds, building a false floor with sand underneath it so you cannot hear footprints, things like that. Sound treatment is what you do to get rid of reflected echoes. Audio editing is what you do to get rid of chunks or segments, and to get rid of stammers. Audio treatment is what you're doing to get rid of hiss in somebody's recording, to take, and that's important to note, especially if you're planning on paying an editor to edit your show, because it's pretty important for them to know that you want audio treatment or you want audio editing. Which one do you want? Because otherwise you can literally start spending a whole lot more money in redos, because he'll send you a copy and be like, that's not what I meant. Well, what did you mean? Because I just spent 3 hours editing your 1 hour long show and that's not what you meant. And then you get to pay a redo fee for at least an hour or two. And that can get pretty tough. So
can we talk about how to do the audio treatment?
Yeah,
how to get rid of the highs, get rid of the lows, equalize the volumes.
Yeah.
What's the fast, easy way to do that for a new person?
The fastest, easy way to do that for most people, especially when it comes to the main thing that you're going to deal with, especially in the Zoom world, things like that, is really audio leveling. Trying to make sure that your guest track is as loud as you and that your intro isn't like three times louder than y'all, where it's like blasting people's ears. Then you come into the show and it's like, hey, how's it going, everybody? Welcome to the show. And, you know, that's what literally a mastering engineer does in typical music, is make sure that things are at a smooth, even place. And a lot of that can be done with a process called auto leveling. Most softwares have it. It'll be called auto leveling, auto EQ, things like that. And you will basically give it a parameter, like, let's say negative 20, which is the typical LUFS range. Negative 19, I think, is the actual LUFS range by most platforms. So you basically set in what threshold you want the audio to come out at, and it either squeezes the audio down or expands it out to match that level. And then from there, once you have that done, because that may increase a little bit of hiss if somebody's, you know, you might hear a little bit of background noise due to the fact that somebody's low signal got amplified, you know, at that point, that's when you would go in and start using certain frequencies. If you have kind of a tin can sound, sometimes you can kind of bring the 1K on your equalizer out, and that'll smooth that out a little bit. A lot of it is, most softwares nowadays, fortunately, have been used in production environments. So there are presets for a lot of this stuff when you're talking about like hum removal, things like that. So
we work on, speaking of ums and uhs, I keep getting phone calls and it's distracting me. So anyway, one of the things that you mentioned is auto leveling EQ. And one of the things that you mentioned was making all of the level minus 19. And what I did in my company is we brought everything to like minus one, like right around zero.
Yeah.
And nothing plus, because if it went plus, we always heard that it was way too loud. Yeah. You're distorting the sound. So I always thought like just 1 degree below zero would be the right number. But a lot of other people are saying that you want it to be minus 7 or minus 6 or minus 19 now. So I just want to understand what that number ought to be and how come it shouldn't just be zero.
Now, that's a really good question. I've been curious about that for a long time myself. I did for a while. I was the finalization editor for the On Story podcast from Austin Film Festival, put out on NPR, you know, very stylized edit, stylized sound. And because it was going out to NPR, it had to be in very specific regulations. Because if you go over on anything, their stuff's going to squish it down automatically. And when that happens, it just garbles. That's just because they're using external gear that literally just squashes loud signals on purpose. So a lot of the algorithms for certain platforms do kind of the same thing, which is why it's one of those, to err on the side of caution and have it lower could be better and could provide a better listening experience for some people on certain platforms. So I want to say, and don't quote me on this, but I want to say negative 19 lufs is kind of the quote industry standard for podcast platforms of what they request. They'll take anything. Like I don't put my stuff at negative 19 lufs. That's nowhere near listening quality for me. Just as an audio engineer. So yeah, okay. I float mine pretty close to zero myself.
So if you could teach us how to get rid of the high pitch sounds of the voice in post-production and the low pitched, I don't remember right now the term for it.
Sure.
But it starts with a C and they're basically narrowing down what it can be heard. And it's supposed to be a lot more clear. I don't think it's condensing, but it's something like that.
No, there's compressing and limiting.
Yeah, compressing. Thank you.
Now, technically, what is happening with a compressor / limiter, you're trying to do that either beforehand or individually per track after. And a compressor, basically, you set a threshold to, say, a certain dB level. And anything below that dB level will be pushed and compressed through the pipe. Anything louder than that dB level will be squashed down and limited through the pipe. So if somebody came in and started screaming on your show, it would automatically lower that level to whatever your predetermined output threshold is. I think what you're asking, Adam, is basically typical equalization, which is applied in post-production in your digital audio workstation on the track itself. Where you would put on an equalizer, be it a parametric, where, like I said before, that would have numerous knobs, about 5 to 10, each one controlling a range of frequencies. So you're kind of sculpting that curve inside of that as it moves along. And then there's what's called the band EQ, which is what I prefer using, where you can see 1 through 10 band, 1 through 20, or 1 through 30. I normally use 1 through 30 because you can really dial in the hertz at that point. And basically, you can either go through, like some people do, trying to find the exact frequency to get rid of by turning it up, seeing if that's the sound you're trying
exactly.
to find, and then turning it down. Now, the one thing to remember whenever you're equalizing, especially with deep cut, where you're trying to like get rid of something, is that the frequencies around it always have harmonics. So the more you cut that, the more you start affecting the frequencies around it.
Awesome. We got deep into a few things, which is super good. And I actually have my next podcast is about to happen because we got so deep. So here's the last two things. Number one is publishing platforms that people should be using.
Yes.
I've been using Libsyn for my podcast. We have a lot of podcast clients that use Buzzsprout and some others. Do you have a suggestion and or which one do you use? And then I just want you to sign off by letting the listener know the best way that they can find you, just to remind them.
Absolutely. I myself, or my shows as well as my network, am a Spreaker user. I love their metrics. I love their ad insertion. They go to tons of platforms and give you really, really good control over your RSS feeds. Also, the metrics are just outstanding on the higher packages. I can be found through my website, Talking Sound Podcast, through my company, HC Productions. So hcproductions.org, talkingsoundpodcast.com.
Perfect. Christopher, I think we need to just have you on the show once or twice more, because I'm sure we could geek
Absolutely.
Out on just
same thing,
subtle man. Topics and just jump in for a bit.
I know. And so. I definitely want to have you on my show to talk about the program that you have going on, which is amazing. I love Sweet. Seeing the way that you are helping people out. I'm the same way. It's just, I've seen so many people that came into horrible advice along the way that it's, I can't not help. I can't not. So we awesome. Should definitely tag back and forth and see what else we can't do to help each other out, man.
Done and done. Thank you, Christopher. All right.
Hey, thank you.
If you're glad that you checked out the podcast today, if you got some value out of this episode, some actionable takeaways, I invite you to do one of three things. A, you could do a written review on Apple. Let us know what you think. Just an honest written review. B, you could share the podcast with a friend of yours who needs it. Or C, at the very least, implement what you've learned to take your business and your podcast to the next level. And I'll see you on the next episode.